Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. I am your host, Chris Eaton. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we got a guest on here that I'm quite excited. This is, I'm getting old, so I can officially say this. This young whippersnapper here is taking the world of Kaiju News by storm, and I am honored to have him. Sir, introduce yourself for the people at home who are listening to this and can't see your face.
What's up, guys? My name's Jacob Lingle. It rhymes with Chris Kringle for you older people out there. I run Kaiju United. A lot of fun stuff going down on that. Social media, website. We do news, articles, interviews, reviews. Pretty much anything you can think of. We just pretty much want to be like Dread Central or Bloody Disgusting, but really zone in on that Kaiju stuff because we need some experts out there. Not that there aren't, because we have Chris here, but, we just want to give it a little love. But, yeah, it's been fun. It's been a fun journey, and you're right. I turned 27 last week, so, I'm getting up there in age, carbon dating.
But, dude, it's cool here. Once you start rocking the gray, then, as they said in 302, then you can sit. You have a seat at the table. But no, man, seriously, I'm glad to finally have you on. I have been beyond impressed with the work that you guys have done in such a short time. It's, I ran a website with my good buddy about, going on 15 years ago, and I know the endless amount of work and tireless effort that goes into it just to kind of crest over, just even to peek over the fence, if you will. So see how fast you guys have risen and how much you guys have gotten out there. It just brings joy to my heart as someone who, I stepped away from that, the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast, we never intended to be a website. It was always supposed to be audio, video, and then the social media aspect of it just kind of blew up, but you guys are actually putting the work in. I mean, I know what it's like sitting there, coming home from work, from your day job. And I got 20 news pieces to write. I got, op-ed articles, all that fun stuff. And by the time you realize it's 1 a.m. and guess what? You go to bed, get up, start it all over again. So yeah, bravo.
You just explained it. Yeah. Just explained it. I appreciate it, man. Even today, as of the day we were recording this, I was up till 2 a.m. I wrote that Gamera drop, and then I scheduled. Mm-hmm. I pretty much scheduled out every post on our socials, just so I didn't have to deal with it today.
You should. It's that's the smart way of doing it. You throw it all out there once, it gets lost in. It is an intricate web of deceits, and there's a minotaur at the end of that maze. No. You didn't post enough, or you didn't post properly. So these three stories have disappeared into the ether.
Dude, and you did it a while ago, but now you're at the mercy of the algorithm and stuff.
Oh,
whole different rabbit hole. You got search engine optimization. That's why those sites like Screen Rant have really funky titles, clickbait. It's because they're maximizing that SEO and, getting really high rankings, but at what cost?
Yeah, I know. I hate it. I hate what the internet's. Look, man, I was, I guess you would call it, wasn't an internet 1.1. I think I was the beginning of the 2.0 generation with AOL. So back in the Wild West days when it was just fun and people, you had to go your only search options were maybe GeoCities had a little search button in it, and then Yahoo. That was it. And then Ask Jeeves came around, and everyone in my junior high would type in dumb stuff to Ask Jeeves. And of course, the guys at the programmers were like, hey, there's going to be a bunch of stupid kids asking stupid questions. So we had to have stupid answers to be smart asses back to them. So that was the fun times, the Wild West. And now we live in the age of social media and stuff. And I don't know, every day I start believing that dead internet theory. And I'm like, it's not, it's not. Yeah, I'm like, it's not as fun as it used to be, man. spend up all night looking for ghost sites and watching, you know, three parts of Invader Zim on early YouTube, because that's, you can only upload 15 minutes at a time, because that's how they, that's the only way you could do it back then. It was fun. It was exciting. And now it's just like, yeah, you know, I believe it, oh, the heck, this isn't blanking. Guy that drove the Campbell soup. Oh, God. See, this is what happens when you get old. You start blank. You have something at the tip of your tongue. Andy Warhol. Andy Warhol famously said everyone's going to have their 15 minutes of fame. And he didn't live long enough to actually see it come true. Like, it was prophetic of, you know, the day and age we live in. So, but we're not here to talk about dead internet theory. And
That was a rabbit hole. Yeah.
Going down the rabbit hole of like creepy ghost videos and stuff back in the day was much fun. We're here to talk about kaiju. And most importantly, normally at this time of the year, Jessica and I recap our misadventures, trotting across this great country of ours, because normally G-Fest and Comic-Con are like back-to-back, and we do both. Unfortunately, this year, we could not attend G-Fest. We were really bummed, but we both had a ton of stuff that came up that just pretty much, you know, just made it impossible to be there. But that's why I asked Jacob on, because he was there. And not only was he there, he and his team were in force. And I was here in my home in Texas, just looking at him like, man, you guys are just hammering coverage left and right. So that's one of the main, you know, other than getting the man himself on, because we've spent late nights at G-Fest talking, you know, sharing tales like Vikings of yore. But I want to get this man's prowess on, because I was beyond impressed by the coverage you and your team did. And you were there front row center for what looked like us. Awesome G-Fest. And the fact that, like, Super Raya was in force there, they brought the suits. That was the biggest. I'm like, they brought the suits. Damn it.
They brought the suits. They had, they had a Gyrus suit, which was crazy. Or Gyros, however you want to say it. Like, they really showed up. I mean, we'll go into it, but I think my personal opinion, at least, is Tsuburaya kind of carried this year. Like, they kind of injected a little bit more energy in the G-Fest. You know, they had the stage shows at Hiroko Sakurai. It was just a lot of fun. And to have them get their own room where it was just Ultraman stuff happening all day, all weekend, genius. I love it.
Which room did they give them this year?
So this year, they moved a bunch of stuff around. So they used, so the first big move I'll say is the dealer's room moved, which was like a huge shift. So where those elevators are in the Hyatt, where there's like four pillars, you go next to the registration desk, or at least the floor underneath, I believe.
So that ballroom off to the side. Oh, yeah, wow.
That's what I'm thinking of. Sorry, I was blanking on the directions there. But that ballroom off to the left wing is the new dealer's room, at least for this year. So then what used to be sessions one and two, where we would do panels, sessions one became Dojo Studios. And then behind Dojo Studios was Ultraman. So it was like they were like kind of connected, which is kind of cool, you know, tokusatsu suits everywhere. And then they moved, they shifted down the panel rooms. So like the next rooms over, we had sessions one and sessions two. And then where Dojo used to be at the end of that floor, at the very end by those glass doors, is what they're now calling Artist Alley, which is, interesting.
Yeah. Considering the rigmarole that happened a couple of years ago about Artist Alley. So yeah, it looks like, yeah, sounds like some, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, and I'm not like making like a weird assumption here. There was banners on display that said Artist Alley this way. So it's back. I would say it's back.
Okay. It sounds like some positive changes, you know. we'll save that for an off camera talk. But yeah, so it sounds like, yeah, I mean, you were there last year. I was there last year, and I was blown away by the attendance of the show last year. Was it about as big this year, or was it bigger?
I think it was bigger.
Wow.
When I talked to Peyton Lees, for those who don't know, he's in charge now of G-Fest. Mm-hmm. The pre-sales last year, when we talked about 2.5 weeks before the show, was at 7,000. Just in pre-registration. This is not people just showing up with little Timmy buying tickets for Saturday. Hey, it's the weekend. Let's go check it out. This is people in advance, pre-registration, 7,000. The ballpark I heard for this year was closer to 9.
Wow.
I've heard 9 and I've heard 10. So I'm gonna play safe and go 9. It was pretty crazy.
That's absolutely insane, man. I mean,
I'm gonna tell you this.
Here's a good, okay.
I'll go ahead.
No. Finish your thought.
I'll go. So this year, I did not get to enter the dealer's room until Sunday. There was a line wrapped around the elevators all day Friday, all day Saturday.
Whoa.
There was no go, unless you wanted to stand in line. And the lines moved pretty quick because David Nunes does a pretty good job. But it was just, there were so many people that wanted to go in there and buy stuff that, like, the only time I could just walk into the dealer's room and check it out was Sunday. And that was an hour before it closed. So I feel really bad for all the vendor people that I love and adore that, you know, I'd like to support. But it was a line. There was a lot of lines.
Wow.
There was a line for Artist Alley.
Oh, wow.
There was a line to get in there. Yeah, there was a line like going down to registration for Artist Alley. That's crazy.
There's lines all over the place. Nearly 10K for a Godzilla show. That it blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind. I mean, the first show I went to was when they came out to California those 2 years back in 99 and 2000. And, I mean, they held the first show in Burbank where Monster Palooza used to be held. And I think then they had maybe like 3,000 people, if that. And it still felt like, oh, you know, we're a little bit of a tight room, because that's that little Marriott Convention Center it's not that big. It holds, you know, it's one giant dealer's room, and then, like, there's a couple small side rooms. So they moved it to the Roosevelt the year after in downtown, like in Hollywood proper. That was not a great venue. So I understand why they went back to Chicago, because after that year, at like 17 years old, I was like, you could have done better. There's a lot of better places out in the greater LA area. You could have done this, but sure, why not? But, you know, going back to the, you know, the Crown, when, you know, Jessica and I were there for like maybe the last 4 years they held it there. And then now the new location at the Hyatt, I thought it was like, man, this is a great upgrade. But even last year, I was like, oh, you guys are going to have to start upgrading soon.
They outgrew the Hyatt, dude.
I can't believe that. They're there for 3 years and they outgrew it. I mean, I noticed it was a great testament because, you know, G-Fest is that place of like, everyone gets together once a year during the summer. You know, they hang out. Everyone has their groups. Everyone says hi. There's people I don't see all year that I only see at G-Fest. And I understand it's a camaraderie show. But last year, just watching Saturday and just families roll in from the greater Chicago area, or at least driving in from like Indiana and the surrounding states, I was like, oh, okay, this is very different, because most of these people weren't here afterwards because they're clearly not staying at the hotel. And it's just so many little kids now. And the Grinch I am, my heart grew 3 times bigger. And I was just watching all these little kids that are like 7, 8, and they're like, I need Baragon and I need Megalon. And I'm just like the single tear rolling down my face. I'm like, oh, you don't know how good you have it. You children, please appreciate this. Appreciate it.
I guess I could say I was one of those kids, because my first G-Fest was 2012, and I was 14. So, you know, I wasn't tiny, but I was still, you know, a kid. So seeing it now at 27 and seeing the next generation show up, it's amazing. It's wonderful. Like, I don't need to buy any of those figures. Like, just let those kids have fun and buy them, man. It's cool.
Exactly. And that's the thing I've been, you know, I'm part of so many collector groups. If you've seen my Instagram, I post a bunch of nonsense. It's a lot of weather videos because I'm that weird dude that's obsessed with the weather and stuff. But I also post a lot of toy stuff, like when I'm out and about and I'm bored. Let me walk into Target and see and scream at the Marvel Legends figures for being overpriced. But I moved out here to Texas 4 or 5 months ago now, and I had a gigantic collection, and I had that. I talked to Kyle from the Kaiju Cast about this, and he had a museum of a collection. I was lucky enough to, you know, go to his house a couple of times in Portland, and he had a war room. It's not a collector's room. It was a war room. Like, this guy had the setup I was jealous of. And this past November, when I was in Japan, we met up a couple of times and we were talking about this. He's like, yeah, dude, I'm getting older. You know, I love this stuff, but, you know, you come to a point, you don't need all of it. You need just buy the things that really, you know, to quote Marie Kondo, spark joy, you know. And so he's like, I'm just focusing on my Sofubi. Every once in a while, a very detailed figure will pop up and catch my eye. And that's the approach I've taken. Like, I'm looking at what's left of my collection right now, and every piece is either something that has sentimental value to it, or like, I ain't ever getting this back, so I can't get rid of it. So, but I'm with you, man. Like, you know, I don't need every Bandai. Let that kid have that Bandai. When I sold my collection off before I moved, 99% of the people that were buying off me from Facebook Marketplace were parents, and they're buying for their kids. And they don't know. They're like, I don't know. What's a Jet Jaguar? Do you have that? I'm like, yes, I have one. He's like, okay, that's what my kid's asking for. I'm like, how old's your kid? It's like, he's 7. I'm like, how does he know this stuff? He's like, we got HBO Max, and that's all he watches all day. I'm like,
yes. Yeah, okay. Good kid.
Good kid, man. Good parent, too.
Yeah. So, but no, I totally agree, man.
Mm-hmm. It brings me joy to see that this show is actually blowing up like it is. I mean, it is a testament to those MonsterVerse films. And, you know, now you can't disregard, you know, the cultural, lack for better words, penetration, if you will, of Minus One. Because a lot of people now, that's the Godzilla movie they know. That's the Japanese Godzilla movie. Outside of you know, they know what Mothra is, but they can tell you what Minus One is because they've all seen it. Because there was nothing else to watch in December of 2023. So I've talked to Jessica about this when we started this podcast back in 2013. It was right after Pacific Rim. And I think the legendary film was, we hadn't gotten the trailer yet. And she's like, well, how, you know, what are we going to carry this with? I'm like, we'll figure it out. We'll interview some people, you know, maybe we'll review some things, but you know, this is a niche thing. Little did we know how much this thing was going to steamroll in the 12, I don't know what it is. Yeah. We're 11 years out from MonsterVerse, and just, I've been ecstatic to see how much it's blown up. Like I've told people all the time, just be grateful for what you have. Because I've been through the dark times. The generation before me went through the dark times. So your cup overflow. Yes. Your cup overflow. So be grateful that you're getting as much as you're getting. So, but
one day it might not. I'm just saying.
It's like an earthquake. It's like a drought. It ebbs and flows. It's not happening now, but one day it will happen. So one day, the general public's gonna be like, hey, we're good, we're full, let's move on to something else, and then this will taper off. It won't ever go away, but it'll die down, and you'll have to wait another 10-15 years for someone who grew up on those MonsterVerse movies to come into Hollywood and be like, hey, I grew up on those guys, I want to make a Godzilla movie. And then the cycle will begin anew if it's done right. But let's talk about G-Fest, sir. So big huge crowd. As you said, the focus this year seemed to be Ultraman centric. How was that old, you know, Super Raya was out there in full force. How was that?
Yeah, I would definitely say Ultraman kind of carried a little bit. Obviously there's cool stuff at G-Fest every year, but, the Ultraman presence definitely elevated it a little bit, at least for me. Just having an Ultraman room at G-Fest with, you know, they had Ultraman Z come out and do a meet and greet on stage. You know,
that's awesome.
For a long time, me personally, I felt like the Ultraman coverage at G-Fest and other events was the 66 show and Ultra 7, and that's it, which is completely not what Ultraman is. That's like cutting off its Son of Godzilla. Like, there's so much more. So to see the full embrace, you know, of Ultraman Z and Gyrus and Pigmon and Baltan and all these characters people love, you know, going up on stage and just taking a picture with them like it's Disneyland, I think was one of the best things. I think that's one of Super Raya's bread and butter.
Like, it very much is.
They're so good at that.
This is why we got to get you to Japan, because you need to experience some of this. We got to get you to Kaiju Sakuba. You know, sadly the Kawasaki location is closed, but the other one in Tokyo is still open. The Tokyo one is still cool. Don't get me wrong. It's just smaller. That's the only problem. But on the weekends, they have Baltan. They have Zetan. They have the wide variety of the more alien kaiju running around. And as you're sitting there having a beer, eating, you know, your gyoza, they just come over and Baltan is just, and you're like, this is amazing. This is fantastic. And this, as you said, this is what Super Raya does best. They do this. I've been saying for years, I'm like, if they brought those stage shows out here as publicity, they would capture the imagination of children, because now it's there. It's real. This is something Toho used to do back in the day. They don't do anymore, but Super Raya is still keeping that going. And I'm glad to see that, you know, Super Raya is now, you know, there's a whole story behind it. People can go back to our past episodes and look, the Chiyo nonsense, all that stuff. But the fact that they're finally seeming to break through that wall and penetrate the, you know, the Western culture a lot better, brings me joy, because it's Ultraman's geared towards kids who love Godzilla. And there's absolutely. So, the fact that they're like, hey, we got these suits, let's ship them across seas and let's do these stage shows. I'm like, okay, this thing's going to blow up sooner than later.
And it's cool, because at G-Fest, it was kind of a modest setup where they had the projector screen where they could play clips and backgrounds. And they had their sound, I don't know what it is, like a sound table, for lack of a better term. And then the suits came out of the curtain, walked on stage, and did some stuff. Granted, they're pushing to do more of the Japan-style stage show, because they also had the Ultraman update panel at G-Fest where Jeff Gomez, DK, and Danny Simon, all the big boys behind Super Raya USA, who were there, which was really cool to see, they pretty much laid out their plans going into 2026 at G-Fest, which is kind of really the first time, at least in my experience with G-Fest, a major company that does kaiju has done stuff like that. It felt more like a traditional Comic-Con experience where they were like, hey, Ultraman, what's coming out? You know, these shows are coming to Blu-ray. These are coming to 4K. And we're doing a stage show in New Jersey, and it will be the closest stage show to our Japanese shows we've ever done in the United States. So, I mean, they're all in, and it's so cool. And not to toot the KU horn, but we did drop that exclusive on all those announcements, which was kind of dope. It was really cool.
Like I said, like as a former as a former writer, a guy who ran a website, seeing you guys get those exclusives, it was like, again, my Grinchian heart, to, you know, repeat it, just grew three times its size. So I was so proud, so proud of you guys. So you're out there breaking news, and not only that, but for me, the biggest news, like, it's a weird thing to hear news breaking out of G-Fest. Like, that show is was always like, it's a dealer show. You come out, you hang out with your friends. Like, news doesn't break. Like, there's fan panels. You know, Jessica and I are up there doing our panel. We bring people to talk. Or you get Kevin doing his deep dive panels. Kevin Durndorf. Like, you go to his panel and you're like, I'm going to learn some history. And that's kind of, oh, everyone loves Kevin. Kevin's the best. Like, I got to get him back on the show. That's just stuff I want to talk about. So, but, that's what it is. So when I'm on Twitter, I still call it Twitter, and I'm seeing like news out of G, I'm like, news out of G is like, wait, did something happen? Like, because something always happens at that hotel. I was there for Kevin Smith's show back in October. And once again, someone pulled the damn fire alarm because there was like a prom, like a high school thing going on. So it feels like every year there's something, some shenanigans that happens at that hotel.
There is.
There always is.
There is.
But news, physical news, the people are like, oh my God, like, whoa. The big one for me, man, and seeing you guys post about it, was that Mill Creek finally, much like the Spider-Man writes for years that we couldn't get a movie. Mill Creek just cut the bushes down, untangled the string, and we are getting Ultraman Great and Ultraman Powered on Blu-ray for the first time in North America. Oh!
I had the same reaction. So yeah. I can talk a little behind the scenes a little bit, not too much, but I knew about that. They actually reached out Wednesday when I landed and said, we want to do this. We've cleared it. We want to give you this exclusive for Saturday. Are you ready? So I knew on Wednesday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I had to sit with that knowledge of everything they were going to announce and just be like, oh, you guys don't even know. I love it so much. I was like, it'll be good.
The thrill of the surprise is one thing, but sometimes when you're kind of in on it and like you're part of the little circle and you're like, ooh, I can't wait to tell you that kind of thing. There's a little, you do get a little kind of like a thrill off of it. I've been in that position a couple of times. So, but man, Blu-ray, like I can get rid of my really crappy, you know, Malaysian bootleg that I have of Ultraman Towards the Future. I don't have to fork out $190 for the Japanese DVD. I am beyond ecstatic because that's my Ultraman. That's Ultraman amazing. Towards the Future is my Ultraman, and it brings me such joy. I'm like, oh, like, look, I've gotten to do a panel with Dory Krause, Jack Shindo himself. And I, like, now that, like, they're embracing, like, I told Jessica, I'm like, we gotta get this dude to G-Fest. And he's like, well, I've been before. I'm like, no. We get you now. We get you now. Yeah. Now that everything's back in. I get
when that comes out, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because, like, he did that All Monsters Attack show in 2023. And I, admittedly, I had not seen the show and really watched it at that time.
Yeah. Youngest.
But, like, I went to the VIP dinner that Jim puts on for the guys he flies out, and everyone flocked to Kitagawa and stuff. So I sat down with Jim, and I had dinner with Dory Krause, which was really interesting because he's just a nice, chill guy. Like, it was just to talk to him. It was cool.
He's the best. Quick story. So 2 years ago, he came on our G-Fest panel or our Comic-Con panel. So this is the post-COVID first year, Comic-Con. And Jessica reaches out. She's like, hey, so we're going to cover Ultraman. And our friend Hiroshi Kanatani, who's at Comic-Con every year, he tours the U.S. around the time. So he's going to come on the panel. I'm like, cool. Like, well, Hiroshi, we'll just, you know, bivouac and talk things. She's like, I also got Dory Krause. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, he's coming on. I'm like, You got Jack Shindo coming on. She's like, yeah. I'm like, Jessica, you're going to need to sit in front of me because this dude was my Chuck Norris growing up, besides the Green Ranger. These were the two shows. I love Power Rangers and that Ultraman show, and those were like my heroes I was looking up to. So if I start acting like a fangirl, you take all 101 pounds of you and just knock me stupid if I start acting like, you know, I'm fangirling. What I didn't realize was Hiroshi is the biggest Ultraman fan on the face of the planet. So before the panel, we're in the library, and I was talking to Dory beforehand. And, like, again, this dude is the coolest guy in the world. He's a wealth of knowledge, too. Lives a very fascinating life. And Hiroshi comes up, and I'm talking to Dory. I turn on, hey, Hiroshi. He's like, hey, okay, hey. And, you know, he speaks English, but his English is very... It's conversational at best. And I introduce him, like, hey, here's who's going to be on the panel with us. And he's looking at him. And this is a guy that's like in his 50s. He's just kind of staring. He's like, where do I know you? And I turn to, like, Dory Hiroshi. He's, you know, he's an artist for Toho and Super Riot. He's like, oh, hey. And Hiroshi leans forward and he's looking at me. I'm like, Ultraman great. And his eyes widen. He's like, Ultraman great? Oh, and he starts doing the whole, like, double clasp handshake, and I'm like, oh, God, I got to tell Jess, like, now she's got to worry about Hiroshi. So we're up on the stage. Jessica and I stand at the podium usually, and Dory's sitting here, and to the side of him is Hiroshi. And Dory's talking, and I lean over a little bit, and I see Hiroshi just like this, like kind of like he's just... It's like that scene in Indiana Jones where they're all like ogling, you know, the girls in the class are just like ogling. And it's like watching this 50-year-old man become 9 years old again. And he was beyond ecstatic. He was beside himself. Like, he sat there for 20 minutes outside just talking. And Hidori's like, that's cool, man. Thank you. Like, cool. And Rosie's like, no, hold on. Goes back, gives him a little sketch and everything. I got a picture with the two of them. And you cannot define the amount of joy that is in this man's face. Again, grown ass man just sitting there, widest smile, Joker-esque, if you will. Al, just me and him. And he's like, I got to go back, but you bring Dory in? I'm like, he just said, like, hey, I've never been to Comic-Con. I have this pass. You guys want to walk around? And I feel like Wayne and Garth in Wayne's World when they're backstage with Alice Cooper. It's like, no, hang out with Alice Cooper. Like, okay. I'm like, okay, I'm going to walk around with freaking Ultraman. If you went to 9-year-old me and told me this, I would have punched you and called you a liar. But here I am, like, walking Ultraman around. We're talking about fine wine and spelunking. And that's what this guy was, like, super into. So, yeah, that's my little side tangent. So, back to...
That was a good story. That was a great story.
Yeah, so, back more...
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Let's get back to G-Fest before I can spin it
back to G-Fest.
Okay.
I got you. I felt that way very similarly because I had the opportunity to handle Noboru Kaneko's Q&A at G-Fest with Kevin Dillon. Mm-hmm. SOS was the Godzilla film I watched when I was that age. All the time, religiously, SOS, SOS, SOS.
It's the best. I love that movie.
Fact that Kevin and I got to sit down and ask him stuff was incredible. He's such a fun guy. He's so fun. He's so positive. He just loves Toku, which is cool. So that was really cool. I felt really bad because we were going over on time, and I could see that the people after us were kind of like, are you done?
Yeah.
In a nice way. It happens. But, like, I had to be like, sorry, we gotta wrap up. I'm sorry. And he was a champ, man. He just went, oh, maybe next time I can tell some more stories. I tell a lot of them. So he's cool, man. But, like,
see, this is the thing why you guys are there. You gotta wrangle these guys. And, like, okay, let's go find an empty room. Let's go sit down for an hour. Tell me some stories. That's what That's your goal. That's what I try. That's what I try to do with Jessica every year. And that's what I'm like. They're here. You get an hour of the panel. Go ahead.
I got something to say.
Okay.
The one thing I was very disappointed in was that our good friend Avery flew out the original kid from the original Gamera, Mr. Uchida-san.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He did not get a Q&A session or an interview. I would have moved heaven and earth to interview that guy. I tried.
Yeah.
The hard part is trying to do that kind of stuff without a translator on your team. You feel me? It's kind of hard.
Yeah. Been there.
But I so wish. And then Carl Craig got announced. So it would have been even cooler to just be like the friends of Gamera together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's that fan moment right there. But I understand like scheduling and stuff is a thing, but that was my one disappointment. Like Uchida, it's his first North American convention appearance ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like give him something. Like,
I know
if anyone's listening that has that kind of power, like reach out to me. I'll interview him. I'll film it. I'll give it to you guys. I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody,
and but, I mean that's the thing. That's you know what I learned when I was doing the old site and I started doing this. Like, you know, there's people you like admire and like I've never heard from this person. Let me see if they'll even sit down. Like I had that moment with Ricardo Delgado. I asked him, like, he was the first like pro guest we ever asked on the show, and I just approached him at the LA Comic Con. He's like, "Why do you want me to come on your show?" I'm like, well, one, you've worked in this industry for like 30 years at this point. You have stories. But the second thing is you worked on what is probably in our circle, one of the biggest like urban lores of all time, which is that Jan de Bont movie that never got off the ground. Like you were like the engineer of that whole thing. He's like, oh, yeah, I can tell you stories about that. I'm like, well, would you like to come on? He's like, sure. And he showed up. He's like, well, how long do you guys go? I'm like, well, how long do you have? He's like, I ain't doing anything today. 5 hours later, I'm like, I got to cut this thing up into two episodes because this is so long. And then afterwards, he's like, I got a book coming out in like a couple months. Might I come back? I'm like, yes, you may. Because we just scratched the surface with you. So that's the thing I love talking about. That's what I loved when I was doing press line stuff. I'd run into like voice actors. I'm just like, hey, that's cool. Let's ask three questions for your current project. Okay, Steve Blum, when you worked on Guyver, what was that like? He's like, oh, Guyver, holy crap, I haven't talked about that in like 25 years. Like, yeah, it was cool. It was my first paycheck. Well, stuff like that. Like, I ended up talking with 90% of the living cast of Batman the Animated Series. And the one person I got all the time was Andrea Romano, sweetest human being on the face of the planet. I can't say anything. There's not enough positive words to describe Andrea Romano. And she started recognizing me. She's like, hey, how's it going? Because we would do these press lines every like 8 weeks or so. So I'm like, hey, let's give a little quick bit and do business. But then I joked with her. I'm like, I'm eventually going to get your whole life story one interview at a time. She's like, that's fine. I'm like, okay, so let's DuckTales. What was that like? She's like, oh, that was a great time. She's like, Alan Young, best person in the world. I'm like, all right. What about, you know, what was it like working on Avatar? She's like, love those guys. Like, and you just go down the line because they're getting asked the same 9 questions by everyone on press lines. And then when you hit them with something a little bit different, though, they open up. That was John DiMaggio. We were given 30 minutes with John DiMaggio. Like we were at the end of the press line, the guy, Gary, running the press line, he's like, hey man, we're good. The panel's over, so they don't really have to, and he came up to John, he's like, John, you cool? He's like, yeah, I'm having a good time. So what does you guys want to know? I'm like, let me ask you about your movie you directed. Okay, what do you want to know? And you just get so much out of them, and you just sit there and you're just like, this is an amazing moment. Like you did, you know, I don't know if you've had this yet, but every once in a while you get a little imposter syndrome. When you're sitting there interviewing these people, like, what am I doing here? Like, why am I doing this? But you gotta learn, like, roll with it.
I I always tell people, like, I've given you this answer too. I always go, I'm just some guy. Like, I'm some dude in the state of Utah. Like, we do cool things, but I'm not a celebrity. I'm not a famous person. I'm just some guy. Like, that's all. You know, but I've definitely done that on the interviewer side of things. My favorite is the Kitagawa story where I asked him about his rock band, that he plays in a rock band in Japan, and nobody knew Godzilla was in a rock band. But I have a video of him in a Facebook group playing the acoustic guitar, and he was playing Hotel California. And I was like, yo, Godzilla's playing Hotel California? Like, and he's like playing. It's not like, hit a couple frets. He was playing.
Is he getting that deep solo in that? Is he getting the solo and everything in that song?
It was the opening riff.
Okay.
You know, the song. But I wish I heard the solo. That would have been cool. So I was like, hey, dude. Like, I go, I said, and the translator we had at the Los Angeles show was really great because she was a Sega voice actress for her main job, and then she just did translation for fun. Which is cool. I'll have to get her name or something, but she did Crazy Taxi and a bunch of other stuff. Small world, right? So I lean in and I go, I have a question for Tomu. And she kind of looks at him and she goes, Tomu. And we do these paired interviews at AMALA, so he kind of started dozing off a little bit because the other guy was talking for a while. And he shot up, and she asked him about the band, and he just kind of goes, "How did you know about that?" And I was just like, "I don't know." And so it turns out, you know, he's in a band called the Old Man Band, with a bunch of his friends, and they just play rock and roll.
They're like a gig jam band kind of thing.
Playing bars in Shinjuku
somewhere.
Yeah. So, A, my goal in Japan is to find the Old Man Band. And B, I want to find if they recorded anything. Because I got to hear it. I'm dying to know. But anyways, like, he got a kick out of that. Like, that opened him up. Like, everyone's like, "Was the suit hot?" Or, "What's your favorite Godzilla monster?" I was like, "Dude, tell me about your guitar."
Yeah.
And, after that, he was like, you know, he treated me like one of the boys. He would like smack my shoulder and laugh and stuff. I was like, yeah, okay. But that's all it takes, you know?
One, it shows, you know, this is the thing I've learned, you know, because I just, you know, I jumped in the deep end right off the bat, like when I was doing this. So I learned the hard way. Sometimes there's questions you don't ask people. Or if you're just asking the same repetitive questions, like, so, you know, do your homework a little bit. It helps if you're a fan of the person you're about to talk to, but don't go into the fangirling stuff first. Like, there is an ebb and flow to it. Like, you have to kind of work your way in, start off with a little business and then get a little personal. And if you can find, especially if you can read people and you know you hit something, like, okay, just let this flow naturally. And then when you find your opening, get in there. And I found that is the, you know, that's the honey that captures all the flies, if you will. And after a while, like, there's, you know, the great, Phil Lamar, that, you know, we just talked to him at a show one time. We weren't interviewing. We're just BSing. And my buddy's like, "Hey man, like, we do this site. Like, we've been talking for like 20 minutes. Do you mind if we just do like an impromptu interview?" He's like, "Yeah, why not?" And then every time we saw him at a show, he's like, "Guys, I read your site. Hey, when's the next time we're going to talk?" I was like, "Phil Lamar wants to talk to us." Like, Phil Lamar. Like, this is insane. And occasionally when I walk by at a show, he's like, "Hey, Realmcast dude." I'm like, "You remember, man?" Like, he's like, "What happened?" I'm like, "Life." He's like, "I know how that feels, man. Stay cool." I'm like, "Thank you, Phil Lamar. Thank you."
It's like the scene in Dodgeball where he's like, "Thank you, Chuck Norris."
Yes. Thank you. No, thank you,
That's Peter. What I thought of.
Yeah, it's pretty much it. Like half my little idioms are all from movies anyway. So you get know the language I'm talking here. Overall, a great G Fest.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so. Like, it seems like everyone there had a lot of fun. Really, it was only with our team. It was just Nick and I, which was cool because we just got to hang out. And really, the only time we worked was like the Subaraya stuff. And that was just the exclusive we had. But otherwise, we just showed up and had fun and just as normal guys. It was really fun last year doing all the crazy coverage and, you know, huge broad scope stuff. But it was cool this year to just experience it again as an attendee. And I think the changes they're making are great changes. Like, did you see the panel room at all? The new panel room?
I saw, they have a background now, right?
Yeah, they got a background. They had lighting. So those really nice pictures we took for the Ultraman panel, that's the new ballroom.
Oh, wow.
That was in that ballroom. And then they got the projector screen on the side and the tech crew. They hired a new tech crew. They'll project video of the panelists on the screen like, you know, a normal convention. So, awesome change. Amazing change. And apparently they filmed the panels. So, maybe we'll see it.
I've always been like, because the only time you see panel shows is like guests who are in the panel filming the panel. Like, you can go on YouTube and there's like a, you know, like 10 dozen G-Fest panels that are up, but I always been like, why aren't you guys recording this? Like, you know, this is how you're going to get people to come to your show because, you know, you show off like, you missed this year. Come next year. You could be part of this. That's the whole point. It's something that, as we're going to segue into, always bugs me about Comic-Con because Comic-Con will film certain panels and other panels are like, we don't care. Because we got, you know, at least 200 panels going on every single day. So we can't, I'm just like, you guys did this for a while. At the very least, like maybe make it an option of like, hey, we kind of want to film this. Like if you want to bring in a camera and film it, that's one thing. But like you guys have the pro stuff and like half the rooms all have the cameras because some of these rooms are giant. And they need, you know, for the screen to show like the panels and stuff, they're already like there. I'm like, just record the dang thing and then release it later. Like you don't have to release it directly after Comic-Con, like a month after, just throw it up going, get some revenue going off that thing on your YouTube, like put a YouTube channel up, you know, make a little extra scratch. And two, like this will probably get you more guests that want to come out and be like, it's Comic-Con. Do I really want, like, no, like you can see like, oh no, this is a thing. Like this is the thing to be doing. So, but segue into Comic-Con, I know, I think we were flipped in our roles where, you know, you're home now from G-Fest. You know, you had members of your team out there though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Nick was out there and then we actually recruited a local guy, Jason, and he kind of helped out a little bit. But this was kind of Nick did a lot of it. Like all the reels on our Instagram, that was all him.
Nice. So, yeah.
Yeah. I got to be Oracle and just watch from the sky. it was cool being like backup support, you know, like if he needed something, but this was really, really a lot of just those two guys on the floor, just doing whatever they want, which is cool.
And you've not experienced the San Diego Comic-Con yet, have you?
I tried this year. I'm really hoping to move mountains and go next year. Like, I will do whatever it takes.
Well, again,
it looks really fun.
Give us a little wink and nudge. You're like, hey, I didn't get in. Like, hey, just come talk. I know people. You know, I know some people, but, this year, I mean, look, this is my 30th show. It's like my 32nd year yeah, I've been going since I was 10 years old. Like this show, this is my mecca. This is my pilgrimage I make every year. This year is a little different because it's the first time I have to go out of state to go to this show, because normally it was an hour drive from my home. But now that I'm out here in the great state of Texas, I'm like, oh man, I really got to watch what I'm buying because I can't ship all this stuff back. So like there was a, you know, that's a show where I buy a lot of art. You know, I don't buy as many figures anymore because one, half the stuff ends up on the internet, like in a week anyway. But the second thing is that, there's not been as much. It's been like, oh, these are just, you're repainting that SH Monster Arts again. Cool. I'm not spending $195 on that thing. You guys can, yeah, good luck with that. But beyond that, this year, because con post COVID has been a very interesting experience. I mean, the first year back was, you know, we're still in the protocols. So a lot of people were like, I'll wait a year. Then the year after that, they had the writer's strike happen and the actor strike. And that was a very interesting, because that happened like 2 weeks before the show. And all these panels, these giant panels, just fell apart. But something that actually saved the show was the fact that they had brought Junji Ito there that year. And they were actually, inadvertently, they were highlighting some anime and some Japanese stuff. And that seemed to be where everyone shifted their focus. And it felt like this year they're like, oh, hey, we can get these people to come out and we can get these companies to really like back us. And there's a huge crowd for this stuff. So they had Demon Slayer in Hall H, and my roommate in my room, not my roommate here, actually got in. I'm like, so did you just walk in? He's like, no, I had to be there like three panels before. I'm like, for Demon Slayer? He's like, dude, it was standing room only. I'm like, okay, I'm clearly out of touch with the modern Shonen fans.
I was trying to be nice and explain it that way. But
look, man, I'm an old man. I've embraced my age. I grew up during the age of Bubblegum Crisis and Gunsmith Cats and Guyver. Like my last Shonen series I really cared about was Bleach. And yeah. I'm like, all this other stuff, I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's for you. God bless you. But also go back, learn your history. That's all I'm asking these kids. I'm like, just learn your history. Know Kenji Sonoda is. Just, that's all I need to know. Do you know who Gou Nagai is outside of Cutie Honey? Like, that's, or Mazinger. Like, have you seen his other works? Just, you tell me that, then I can take it a little serious. But that's just the old man snob in me. This year, though, as I was talking to one of the dudes from Creature Bazaar, he's like, this is a Godzilla-heavy show. He's like, I'm shocked by how much Godzilla there is here. And even I was a little, I'm like, yeah, actually, there's quite a bit, dude. Considering this is an off year for Godzilla. Toho had their first official panel ever. The Legendary was out in full force with their comic book stuff. Mm-hmm. There was IDW's. Yeah, they were, oh my dude, they were hammering that new series. Which, have you picked it up yet?
I haven't.
Okay.
On the side end of things, I'm mm-hmm. reviewing Dead Zone, which mm-hmm. looks really cool and fun. Mm-hmm. One of my other guys reviewed Ongoing Number One, but I'm really excited to read it.
I just read issue one last night, and I'm like, okay, I'm all in on what you get. This is kind of what, and as much as IDW in the early days were putting out some fun stuff, but it was geared towards like the hardcore fans. Like, I love Rulers of Earth. And there were times where they got like these great writers to come in, but they're like, they only tangentially know Godzilla. You know, felt like outside of the Rulers of Earth and maybe, Half Century War. Those were like the two high points for me for that first IDW run. But this time around, one, they've embraced doing crazier ideas. I'm like, yeah, you're in the comic book form. Like, you don't have any restrictions other than Toho saying you can't do this, but you can go ahead and do that. That's fine. Like, go sick with the ideas. And that's what this new Keisei book, the Ongoing, is like, hey, did you like Final Wars? Yeah? Well, guess what? We're doing that, but like as a semi, like kind of gritty X-Men, like 2000 AD style book. And I'm like, oh, yes, you're speaking my language right now. So I am, after reading that first issue, I'm like, oh, I am all in on this. Like, much like how I read that first issue of Justice League versus Godzilla, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a blast. This is going to be fun. This is kind of what I want out of life. Or that Thor versus Godzilla book. Yeah. You read that, right?
Yeah. That was my favorite of the Marvel versus run so far. Like, it was awesome. They got it.
Yeah, let's be honest. That was the best one of that one-shot run. Like, I'm digging.
It was.
I'm looking at I'm like, okay, the tone's very different. You found the right balance, but man, that Thor book was like, if I was 9 years old, this is what I would be writing, but it would just sound Jason Aaron's ability to craft a beautiful scene and just giving me badass Thor and when they did Godzilla the God Butcher, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent, but Godzilla the God Butcher, I'm sitting in my car out here reading this. And I'm just like, you get the hell out of here. This is amazing. And then it ends with Godzilla and Thor killing each other and fighting in Valhalla. Like, can't get better than this.
As soon as I read the announcement, so my friend Haley is the managing editor at KU and is like the diehard Thor fan of the group. Like Walt Simonson, Jason Aaron, she will never, that's her TED talk. Like, read those right now. So as soon as I saw Jason Aaron writing Godzilla versus Thor, I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. But she was like, oh my God, who cooked this hard?
It felt like he was the only one that understood the assignment, as the kids say, you know, he's like, look, I like
Godzilla versus Hulk a lot. I thought they got it pretty good. I just think everyone was disappointed that they didn't, you know, Godzilla versus Hulk, they need to fight. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. No, it felt like Aaron's like, no, let me embrace what this actually is to the nth degree. Like, great. I'm like, you brought the hand in. And then you decided, hey, I'm going to take the GMK Godzilla and acknowledge the movie. I'm like, okay, you're not just like some dude. Like, this wasn't just an assignment for you. Like, this is like 10-year-old you came out and just took over. Middle age you, and just like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Oh, wait, what else can I do? Oh, yeah, I made this little thing called the All Black, the Necro Sword. Let's put Godzilla with that. And like, Mjolnir can smack the crap out of Godzilla. Yeah, that's actually doable. I'm like, oh, man, this is golden. So IDW was, you know, they were pushing hard. Like, their booth, that Case of Godzilla was all over it. Like, just graffitied everywhere. That was their opening signing, was the team behind the books. I believe all of them were there on Wednesday night. That's preview night. There's not a lot going on other than, hey, go get your exclusives now. So either you can throw them up on eBay or you can throw them back in your room and then open them when you get home, because that's how it works at Comic-Con. But the Bandai Godzilla booth was actually a huge step up this year. I was quite surprised by like the amount of effort that was put in. I was a little disappointed they didn't bring the Ultraman stuff like they did last year. Because last year you had the Godzilla booth on one end and you had the Ultraman booth on this end, and they brought the costumes for Ultraman last year. So I got my picture with Zero. And I was kind of like, you get, and they're like, no, we're not doing that this year. Like, we're just focusing on Godzilla. And I'm like, guys, missed opportunity. Like, you could have really saturated the market here and really grabbed a new audience, because as there was no Marvel, you know, the biggest panels were maybe Disney with Predator and Alien and then Tron. And then outside of the South Park guys and Lucas showing up and then ranting and raving for about an hour and a half on the stage of Hall H. Like, I saw clips of that. And I'm like, oh, George, like, and you can see Guillermo del Toro, like, sitting next to him. He's like, oh crap, I'm losing. He's losing it. Like, okay, let me bring it back in. But, other than that, there was like that Hollywood anchor wasn't there like it normally is. So people were exploring other things. Like TV really picked it up, like King of the Hill and Smiling Friends were like the big TV deals this year. But just when you're walking the floor, like I was, again, the last 2 years I've noticed, like, we're aiming more comic book heavy and we're looking at other ends of pop culture to really like expand the show. And it really felt like animation, especially anime, was gaining a foothold. And that's why I felt like the Godzilla effect was even bigger this year, because they're like, hey, you know, we can bring people from Japan. Toho's now like dealing with us. Like, so we can, let's embrace this. And Super 7, we got to talk about Super 7, because Super 7 probably had the pop-up of pop-ups this year, which was the Godzilla Station pop-up off 8th Street in downtown San Diego. Your guys got in for the press thing, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, so we probably bumped into each other without knowing, because once they let us all in, it was like shoulder to shoulder. And it's, if you've never been to Super 7, it's a beautiful store. It's in downtown San Diego, probably the best city in all of California. Very tiny, teeny tiny store.
It looked really small. I was like, wow, they packed all those people in there? That's crazy.
But it is very, very small store. Yeah. Like, comfortably, it fits like 12 people comfortably. Now add, they put a Godzilla, like a 6 foot Godzilla figure, like standing at the door and you walk in. Like, they decked it out. They went all, and this is something Super 7 does every year. They'll pick like a property that they have. And they started doing it with He-Man back in the day, like maybe about 10 years ago. And it became like a ongoing thing. Last year was Dungeons and Dragons. I think the year before that, they turned it into the Cobra headquarters. So when you walked up, there's a bunch of dudes dressed like Cobra soldiers. They had a guy in a Destro mask, Cobra Commander, like hanging out, like, go in, bye! You know, like he was doing the Cobra impersonation. And yeah, that's, if you know, they usually have a booth inside where they're like revealing what's coming up and a bunch of stuff. They didn't do that this year. They had like a spot and a desk, and they were selling like a Sesame Street, like exclusive thing that you could pre-order, but you had to be in the show to order it. And they gave you like a little box. It's like, here's your thing now. And then your other thing will be here in like 2 weeks. Once we tear down the Godzilla thing and get back to work. But when I rolled up to this, I'm like, whoa, man, you guys put some money into this year. Because normally it's like, we dress it up. We put like, you know, a little symbol and stuff. But there's a freaking Godzilla head hanging over the entrance. The mural on the side. And then you walk in, they decorate with lanterns. They have the figure there. Like, Toho was, I talked to the people there. They're like, no, Toho was in with us on this one, too. They were giving out these things. So this is the thing they do every year. They give the entry coins. But this year, man, because usually the entry coins are like these kind of, I'm not saying cheap, but they're economically cut. I'll put it that way. They're kind of like thin, like metal, you know, pressed metal. This is a coin. This is an actual coin. Like this, I don't know if you can, this thing is thick and it's like a slammer almost from back in the day. And I picked up a couple of these because a second I posted this while I was waiting to get in, I had like 20 people like, dude, can you give me one of those coins? Can I get, like, guys, show up. Come on out. Like, I'm not your mule, but turns out I am. I had a lot of friends who are like, I'm not in San Diego, dude. Like, I just want a coin. I'm like, I'll see what I can do. So, yeah, there's a couple of these going on the mail for some friends later this week. But, man, you walk in there wall to wall to wall, just Godzilla stuff. And I picked up only two things because I'm like, these are for reviews. And they were already being passed off to other people. So, I don't have them physically here. They're already gone in the hands of who they were meant for, but they're like, you can open them and review. So if you're watching this on our channel, little business, go check out the reviews right now. I got the bike, which was cool as hell. It was a wind up like mixture of like vinyl tricycle. And yeah, the tricycle. It was like it was tin. Like the actual bike was tin. I'm like, wow. And then I picked up the Super Kaiju, which I'm like, okay. That's cool. But they did give us a freebie bag. I did keep one of the freebie things. I kept one of the fun funds because I've been curious about these things.
Those are cute. Those are cute.
These are very cute. And I was like, you know what? I've been meaning to pick these up. They gave me the bag. I'm like, one of these is in here. That's cool. The Godzilla booth and Bandai, like, their two exclusives were that repaint Monster Arts of Minus One and that gold Godzilla action figure that's been out in Japan since November. And people were lining up and buying these things left and I'm like, I had to have a moment where I stood back. I'm like, okay, you're the hardcore fan, dude. Like, you got to remember, not everyone lives online. So for these people, this seems like this is the exclusive to get when you could been, this has been available to buy online and it's been at three other shows already. So cool. I watched a woman buy 20 of them. 20 of them in front of me. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, these are $30 a piece. Like, you can go on Walmart.com right now for 21 bucks, but
eBay.
Yeah. I don't know. They were giving you a poster when you bought the gold ones, and then if you bought $175 worth, they gave you a gold foil. So I ended up like picking this thing up just to kind of put the order over, because also I was kind of curious about, you know, this new line. I'm like, oh, I don't have to have my buddy in Japan port this over to me anymore. It's cool. But walking around, it was fun seeing, but the lack of, like, I know you guys have a lot of new stuff coming out, but you didn't bring it with you. So I'm like, cool. The only thing they revealed is that they're doing a 5-inch King Ghidorah that's just a remold of their Bandai. But beyond that, it was like, okay, all right. But seeing the fact there were so many people in Godzilla shirts, seeing if I saw Godzilla cosplay, all of that fun stuff, which I was just like, okay, much like G-Fest, I'm like, this thing's taken hold. I'm happy to see it, like, really get out there. My good friend Lenny Romero, shout out to him, Lenz Asians. Yeah, best guy in the world. He had his exclusive Godzilla book at one of the booths. So he did a cover for the Keisei. And then, I had it right here. Oh, we got to talk about, actually, no, I take that back. There were reveals at the Godzilla booth. But it wasn't in the booth.
I was gonna jump in and be like, "Chris, you're sleeping on my guys at Hiya Toys."
Yes, yes. That's the problem. My mind starts running like the hamster on the wheel.
Oh, it's all good. Man, Hiya cooked.
Oh,
I'm throwing the young slang out there, but Hiya absolutely cooked.
Jacob, look, I was at the premiere of Godzilla Final Wars as a young 20-year-old man. I love the works of Ryo Kitamura. I've said this before on the show many times. I will defend Final Wars. I will die on the hill for that movie. And one of the aspects of Final Wars, a man of culture. One of the aspects of Final Wars that I love to death is Monster X. Because he's the coolest. The coolest. And not only that, as a dude that grew up on martial arts films, watched early UFC, but mainly watched Pride Fighting Championship in its heyday, and talking to Kitamura about, I'm like, hey man, in that Godzilla movie, I noticed a lot of like MMA. He's like, dude, I love Pride. What do you think I put half the Pride guys in my movie? I'm like, do it. So watching that, I'm like, oh my God, you gave me Don Fry and Takayama in a giant monster fight. Like, yes. So seeing that Hiya Monster X, I'm like, oh, the pre-order. I've already got my money aside for that pre-order. I am hyped. Like, I've only gotten to open like two of these Hiya figures, but they are, to, you know, not for lack of better terms, they are exquisite. That's why they call them exquisite. They know what they got.
They're pretty cool. And
they are very cool. So seeing that Monster X, I'm like, I didn't pick up the SH Monster Arts because everyone that I talked to, like, this is a junk figure. Like, don't, it falls apart. Don't pick it up. I'm like, okay. But now I'm like, oh, Hiya's giving me like an action figure of Monster X. Oh, mwah, mwah. But the thing that I'm assuming you got the same feedback we got on our socials once those pictures start going out. the things people were really losing their mind over was that the MonsterVerse side of that line, we're getting a Warbat, which I'm still not sure how the articulation in that figure is going to work. Because
how
was
it getting it up? It was
the base. I mean, it's the hard copy, so it's just the resin piece. I saw no articulation whatsoever in that thing. So either it's going to be a wire, which I'm assuming, because if they're keeping the cost down, it's going to be the wire. But I'm like, cool. I don't know how you guys are going to do this.
I was wondering how they got that thing balanced the way. If I'm thinking of the right monster, I might be blanking right now.
That's the big thing. How that was
Yeah. They got that thing to stand, and it's like curled like this. I'm like, how did you maintain that balance?
Because that's just a resin piece right there. That's what those hard copies are usually. So I have no idea what that final version's going to look like, and I'm very curious. But we got that. We got Tiamat coming, which I reached out to Dopo. I'm like, dude, check it out. He's like, oh, damn. I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to get another figure. So,
Behemoth?
Oh, the Behemoth, man. I just like, I'm like, finally, someone has the ball.
They didn't forget him.
Like, the underdog, if you will, of the MonsterVerse, the Behemoth. Like, even my brother, who doesn't really like Godzilla, he knows it because of me. Like, he's like, when that movie came out, he's like, dude, I gotta go see this with you. I'm like, why? He's like, I saw this monster that just captured my imagination. I'm like, what is it? He's like, is that big woolly mammoth looking thing? I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, he's cool. I'm just waiting for them to like, hey, we got this thing sitting around. Like, why aren't we using it? Like, this, I've been saying he's been the Anguirus of the MonsterVerse for some time now, because he's that, you kind of love him. He's got a great design, but he's vastly underused. So I'm waiting for the Kong buddy cop movie that they're going to do with this guy. Like Behemoth and Kong teaming up to fight some, because that's what it feels like they're building to.
They are filming, I think they finished, but they were filming in my home state for about a week. Downtown Moab.
Okay.
That's like 4 hours away from me, but it's still cool that the next MonsterVerse movie is being filmed in my backyard.
Yep. It's a little, you know, you got that little
desert.
That's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon right there. High also, they're doing a 95 Burnin, which it's not painted, but the sculpt looked very nice.
Cool.
We're getting a Tokyo SOS Godzilla. I'm pretty sure that's probably speaking to you a little bit. And we're getting the 2000, not the Godzilla 2000. We're getting a Mega Gearus Godzilla, which I've been finding interesting considering that's kind of the black sheep of the Millennium films, but both Bandai, it seems like once Bandai's like, hey, we're doing this, everyone else is allowed to do it now. So I don't know what's going on, but like all of a sudden I'm like seeing all this Mega Gearus stuff like pop. I'm like, cool, weird. All right. But you know what? I love that movie. So I'm like, I'm not saying no. The stylist.
Mega Gearus.
I again, die on that hill for that movie. I love that movie.
Me too. Yeah.
And the fact we got like the stylist Scar King with the pose where he's got the gem that sits on top of Shimo. I'm like, we're getting into kit busting now with these figures. Like, it's insane. Like this and Wonderfest was going on at the same time this weekend as Comic-Con was going on. And X-Plus is like, hey, remember that Gamera? Like plastic kit we're giving you. Guess what? Now we have add-ons. You can buy a sheet of Legion mini of soldiers to add on. I'm looking at that thing. I'm like, I do not have the patience to cut each and every one of these individual little bastards out and paint them. Like, God bless whoever does that. But no. This feels like this is torture. But this is the world we're living in. Like, hey, this thing doesn't move, but we can make them combine somehow, like a Megazord. There was also, if I recall, I should have had these ready. Like, what am I doing?
Ah, that's cool.
There was more. Oh yeah, there was one more. There.
Yeah, there was Tiamat Behemoth. They revealed the Scylla fully, which is cool. Spider guy.
Oh, the Scylla. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, we have Monster X.
Burning Godzilla, Behemoth, Oh, it's against Mechagodzilla. Okay, so it's that one. Tiamat, yeah, Scar King. We actually, there's a basic exquisite Scar King coming as well.
Yeah, there we go.
With two different heads, two different hands, and the belt, and the, and you know, the Chewbacca belt, as I call it. Warbat. We got the stylist. There's the Skiller that's completely painted, but he was announced like last year or so. And then they had the fixed, Godzilla, 2001 with the fixed head, and it looked a lot better. So those were the big, I remember like I was walking into that show and all of a sudden Lenny of all, you know, we're talking about, sent me a picture. I'm like, oh crap. Or normally they're at the Diamond previews booth, but Diamond doesn't exist anymore. So I walked over to the weird empty space that it was just a couple of, there were just some display cases of like there, because there was a highest section over there. There's already stuff. I'm like, where the hell are these things? And I walked over there. I'm like, oh, they're right there. Okay, cool. And yeah, so those were the big awesome reveals. At that Diamond booth, there was the Star Ace figures that I guess they're releasing over here. But yeah, I feel bad because last year when I was walking through that booth, there was a lot of stuff they were aiming to release, and now it all sits in limbo somewhere, probably sitting on a container in San Pedro because Diamond doesn't exist. And they're like, I don't know. We got 5,000 Godzilla animated, the Hanna-Barbera Godzilla sitting in a crate. They can't go anywhere. Like, I don't know what's going on with this stuff. That's for a toy podcast for another day. The panels. So we had our panel, which thank you to everyone that came out. Actually, it was one of our best attended panels. We nearly had a full house. So nice. If you were there, thank you for coming. The Godzilla panel. Let's talk about this for a second, Jacob.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, all right. So I think we're, you know, I've said before and I'll say it again. Fans, we are our own worst enemy sometimes. If you watch wrestling, if you're a wrestling fan, you know this for a fact. Because
don't trust the dirt sheets.
Don't trust the dirt sheets ever. And we all made assumptions this weekend about something that we thought was going to happen. But guess what? Did not happen. So I had my panel, Jessica and I had our panel at 2 p.m. I was at the library, so I wasn't on site. The panel room that was holding the Toho panel is what we call Little Six. There's Big Six and Little Six. Little Six holds maybe like 1,000 people. Big Six holds maybe like 2,500, maybe 3,000 people. It's a big room. And I mean, I was in the Gundam panel the night before, and that thing filled up, packed, just for Gundam Wing. So
I already had a feeling.
Oh, the nostalgic joy I got off that thing. My buddy that I was with, he's the biggest Gundam nerd, but like he's not the biggest Gundam Wing fan. But he's like, I understand, man. Like, for you, for a lot of people, this is your first Gundam. So this is where the heart lies, as H. Shen told Jack Burton. So I got out of that panel and I'm like, I ain't making this thing. So I contacted a few friends. They're like, we're in line. We're here. I'm like, cool. Just let me know what happens because I know I'm not getting in. So they're like, cool. That panel started at 4:15. 5:15, I'm on the floor. I don't hear anything. I'm like, huh, that's weird. Let me look online. And all I saw was people saying, hey, I'm not seeing any panel news. What's going on with the panel? There's nothing going on with the panel. And that's when I'm like, oh no, this was a dud. Oh, there's going to be a lot of pissed off people. And sure enough, you guys were there, right?
Yeah. Did they get in? My two guys were front row. we were ready. Like, we were ready. So on site, Nick and Jason were front row in the front row seats. Like, there's a shot we took, or Nick took, of Shinji Higuchi's, like, name card on the table. Like, that's how close he was. He just went and zoomed in like this on his phone. And so they were ready. And then on the website end, I had me and I had a contributor, and we were on standby. So if he texted us and said this, type it up and run it. You know, we had contingency plans on what would go down. Like we had graphics made for, like, if they announced a sequel, if it's another thing that we heard. See, we were like battle station ready.
This is what I love about you guys. You're like CNN and ABC News when they were going to take like a weekend break, and they would pre-roll like the president has been shot, like, or this celebrity has died. Like, they have stuff ready to go once that news breaks, even though there's not. They're like, you're trying to predict the future. You're trying to predict the future, and it doesn't happen. So this stuff just gets tossed to the wayside. Hey, this is how
we tried.
This is how ready we were. So for those who don't understand what the hell we're talking about, let me give a little context to this. Was it three days before Comic-Con? Maybe it was last Monday. Bloomberg. Yeah, so Bloomberg put out an article. And in that article, they're talking about Toho and a bunch of stuff. And they let it slip that, hey, not only is Yamazaki working on his new Godzilla film, but Shinji Higuchi is gearing up to do a sequel to Shin Godzilla. And I went, ha! Interesting. You are a reputable news site, but here's the thing. Bloomberg has been wrong in the past, mostly because, you know, working enough press, you understand that sometimes people don't know what this niche things are, and you're playing telephone, and maybe something got said that wasn't supposed to be said. Something was told and you were just interpreting it because you had to do a little research after. But they were saying, like, hey, keep your ear out because this might be being announced. And Higuchi is at Comic-Con. Why is Higuchi at Comic-Con? He's got nothing coming out. He's not just showing up to promote the re-release of Shin Godzilla. He's got to be announcing something. This is an official tone. This is Comic-Con. This is where you announce this stuff. And much like people thinking Cody Rhodes was going to make his grand return at a Madison Square Garden show, a house show, you know what I'm talking about. No, we worked ourselves up in a tizzy for nothing because it literally was Shinji Higuchi coming out going, go see Godzilla, Shin Godzilla 4K. Bye, thank you. That was it.
And I said on a live stream, a week before Comic-Con, I was that conspiracy theorist, and I was like, there's no way they'd fly him out just for that. There's no way they'd fly him out to just sign stuff and then say, hi, Shin 4K. No way.
That's exactly what they did. That's exactly
we were like battle station ready. Like, I was like, Nick, you text me two words, and I will know what's going on, and we will run this. It was a fun panel. Thankfully, Jason, another guy that was helping us but is not on staff, live streamed the panel on Instagram. So I got to watch the panel through his phone and be like, okay, cool.
It was really a nothing burger panel, wasn't it?
I mean, they just kind of highlighted what was going on. And for the people that listen that aren't chronically online, as you put it to me earlier, I think it was good. In that regard, you know what I mean? For some of the more hardcore guys that know everything and know what's going down, they might not get much out of it. But for those casual, for the kids, for the kids going to that panel, oh my God, a comic, oh my gosh, figures, holy crap, you know?
Yeah.
It was a licensee showcase, I would say. But
so it was IDW, Mondo, and Super 7 basically represented, if I recall.
Yeah.
Looking at the panel, I saw Brian...
And then, oh, go ahead.
Brian Flynn, I want to say Attack Peter, and someone from IDW I saw on the guest list. I was kind of glancing it, and I got lost in the mix of everything else.
So it was Jeff Gordon from Bandai.
Okay.
It was Peter from Attack Peter, Mondo, Brian from Super 7. Jake Williams, the Godzilla editor at IDW. And then it was one of the VFX designers behind Monarch, which is really cool. I think Jessica's actually talked to him when she did like a junket for Monarch. But he kind of broke down like what went into the design philosophy of like the Ion Dragon and what they were thinking. And then they showed a VFX breakdown, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be a great panel in of its own, you know, behind the VFX of Godzilla, and you get Yamazaki, you get this guy, you get this guy, but it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Monarch wasn't the most loved show, and I'll go to bat for it a little bit. So I don't
a lot of good in it.
Into it.
Yeah.
But it really truthfully got exciting when O'Shea Jackson Jr. just showed up.
I saw that. I love this guy, you know. Who'd have thought the son of Ice Cube, like, no, man, I'm all in. I'm in on wrestling, and I'm in on Godzilla. I'm like, dude, I want to hang out with you. Yeah.
But yeah, like,
you got stories.
Like, they were about to ask the last question to Higuchi, and he got up and interrupted. And, you know, obviously it was, you know, wrestling kayfabed for his appearance, but... It was just a fun surprise for the audience, and then
maybe you can confirm this, but I think someone on that panel might have asked a little something of Higuchi, and just kind of went, "I can't say anything because Toho would send a sniper right now." So I think they're at.
So they did. Oh, they knew, dude. They were so self aware. So what happened was. They played the Shin Godzilla 4K trailer, and the moderator from the rap went, "I want to know what happens next." And someone leaned in. I don't know who it was. They went,
"Toho would shoot us on the spot."
Yeah.
And they all just kind of went, "Ha ha."
But I was kind of like,
I stood up. Okay, so that saying, look, they're saying it without saying it. Like, yes, there is some truth to what was said in that Bloomberg article. Like, right now we can only speculate, but if you pay attention to stuff enough times, you know that they're working on something. And look, I'm going to say right now, I doubt it's a direct Shin Godzilla sequel. I think it's Higuchi doing his own thing, which that's what Shin Godzilla originally was supposed to be.
About time.
Yes. Man. And if you know the story, Toho originally wanted Anno, and Anno was like, "I am knee deep in Evangelion." So they went to Higuchi, who did those Attack on Titan movies. He's like, "Yeah, I'll do it." And then Anno, like always, when he's working on Evangelion, had a mental breakdown, and Higuchi going, "Hey man, step away for a minute. Come make Godzilla with me." And Anno being Anno is like, "Let me take over this. Let me do this." And Higuchi's like, "Yeah, I'll help my friend, but I want to play in the sandbox on my own." And I think that's what we're getting next. I mean, Kevin and I have talked about this. Like, it feels like we're in prestige Godzilla time right now, especially in Japan, where they're going for like these big name directors, but like they're kind of going for auteurs. And we were like, who the hell is out there right now? Yeah. So I told him, I'm like, I think Higuchi needs his turn at bat on his own. Like, Anno can still be involved somehow, but, like, everything we saw with Shin Ultraman, you know, again, all my friends, they love Shin Ultraman. They're like,
"I liked it. I dug it."
It's the problem with the other two Shin movies is that, you're just replaying what you loved as a kid. Like, you're doing your version of it, but it's like the Shin Ultraman, Shin Kamen Rider are like cliff notes, where Shin Godzilla felt like it is its own thing, even though it kind of falls in that realm.
That's a good point. That's true. But yeah, like, I mean, we could sit here and spitball directors for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm just saying, Takashi Miike's right there.
I've been saying
he's directed Ultraman episodes already. Like,
come
on.
There's two guys working right now that I have been. Like, I just want to see Godzilla work from these guys. Miike's one, because I got 90% of Miike's catalog sitting in my closet right now because I just unpacked my DVDs. The other is Kita Amamiya. I've been waiting to see what Kita Amamiya, guy behind Garo, is probably the one thing everyone knows, but, like, he is the man has an eye for – I want to see his design on Godzilla, his take, because he makes some amazing. If you watch Mechanical Violator Hikiter, like, I want to see you do this with Godzilla, but he's printing money with Garo right now. So I'm like, cool, you do you, man. Like, this is your big break. This is your thing. But just kind of give me Godzilla at the very least. Kodokawa, reach out to this guy and have him do Gamera for a minute. Like, just see what he can conjure. But beyond that, like, yeah, there's, I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
You got me going on a Gamera rant.
Yeah, I know. But it's good, you know, look, we fans, we build ourselves up over stuff in our own heads. Yes, is there a kernel of truth? Seems like that panel confirmed there's something happening, but, like, I think realistically, we're not going to hear about it until after Yamazaki's movie is out. So, if knowing how Toho works, they're like, we're not announcing, like, three films back-to-back. Like, well, let's get through this first one. Yeah, let's get through this first one first. Yeah.
I had to have that talk with, there's a couple of people I saw minus one that were in the same screening room as me, and after minus one ended, they were still seated, and I just kind of, I was really nice about it, but I was like, hey, like, this ain't that kind of movie kid. Like, Harrison Ford, this ain't that kind of movie kid.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no post credits.
Great movie, but there's nothing else. Go home.
Yeah. So, I got a feeling, Yamazaki is, you know, I'm very curious what this next movie is, because now the world is looking at him. But the problem is that he has his first American movie lined up to go. So I'm telling people, I'm like, temper your expectations. Yamazaki's probably going to give us a good movie, but if you're expecting the quality of Minus One, because look, I think we've done everything we can with solo films at the point. Like, we're going to have to venture back into the versus, like, arena just to deliver something else. And I'm kind of like, he gave us the serious Spielbergian Godzilla movie. Like, he gave us his 80s Spielberg. Let's lean into Jurassic Park Spielberg now and give us a little more, like, kind of adventure and fun. And I got a feeling that might be the direction he's going in. So, I mean, if some of the rumors...
I see it already, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I mean... There's rumors out there that people are returning, so. There's rumors. Yeah, there's rumors. I physically cannot confirm or deny anything, but I've seen things.
I was going to say, I noticed that sense of adventure and tension in the airplane sequence, which was my favorite Minus One sequence, where he's just flying, you see all the land, and then, you know, he's dodging Godzilla. Yeah. There it is, right there, you know? But at least in Comic-Con terms, it was a pretty standard debut. Was it cool they flew out Shinji Higuchi? Yeah. Awesome.
It was.
That was cool. It
very much was. We got one more thing that was debuted at Comic-Con that we have to talk about.
Okay.
And that is in the comic book realm. And we're getting toys. Look, I don't know. Again, I call you young whippersnappers, but this is timeless. These characters transgress time, much like Godzilla himself. And I was sitting on a bus heading over to the convention center when my phone exploded of, hey, did you just see this? And IDW, bless their hearts, they will not leave any stone unturned when it comes to crossover books. And they announced TMNT... and Godzilla. And I just saw that one picture and I'm like, God damn it. Everything I drew in ninth grade, when I was 9 years old, not ninth grade, when I was 9 years old, is coming to life. I drew the Godzilla. I drew the Green Rangers Godzilla. I drew the Dragon Sword fighting Godzilla. I drew Donatello with Godzilla spikes on him. I was obsessed with my Slash figure because he kind of looked like Godzilla. Like, and look, TMNT was I was there. Like, at the beginning, man, like, that cartoon, like, like, my cousins and I would play TMNT. We were obsessed. I was there day one for that first movie. I was there day one for the second movie. I was there day one for that really bad third movie. So, like, they hold a place in my heart like Voltron does. Like, I might not be, it might not be, like, front and center, But it's like seeing an old friend that you're like, I haven't talked to you in a while, man. Let's get dinner. Let's catch up. I love it. So God bless him, because they were doing it. I'm like, wait a minute. Playmates has the Godzilla license. Playmates also makes Turtles. And sure enough, a buddy of mine was in that panel. He's like, oh, did you see this? I'm like, damn it. They're doing the thing. And we're getting toys. We're getting toys of these things. Because, again, Playmates likes that dirty money.
Is this the first time we've really had those crossovers go into toy form?
Like, yeah.
Really toy form? I thought
yeah. so. Monogram came big. The closest. Yeah. Monogram came. I have the Monogram Green Ranger Godzilla form. It's a clip. And I've been sitting here, I'm like, Playmates has Power Rangers now.
They sure do.
They have to be, like, they would be leaving money on the table not doing this. You know, McFarlane made the Godzilla and Kong with Batman and Superman, but that's like, all we had to do was make a new Godzilla mold and a new Kong mold. Like, we're just reusing, and it's not like a smash together. Like, we're just packaging. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, like, crossover-looking characters. Like, they merged. Mm-hmm. Which yeah. now I'm like, hey, Hasbro, how about give me Godzilla the God Butcher? Like, you can do it. Make that mold. I'll buy into Hasbro.
Let's do a proper Godzilla transformer.
Yes. Yes, please. Not a crappy repaint. So this, you know, I was like, everything I drew as nine is coming to life in some form or another. And you know, a lot of my older friends are like, this is stupid. I'm like, you lack joy. You lack joy in your life.
Do like, you this hate is on. Because, like, dude, I'll be honest, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm not really a Ninja Turtles guy.
Okay.
I was a kid, I watched the 03 cartoon. So I had a lot of great memories with that 03 revival. So that's my generation's Turtles, which is cool.
Yeah.
And plus that 07 CGI movie I saw in the theater. So those were my Turtles.
But yeah.
I have Turtle figures from the 03 show I've had as a kid. But I'm not like, oh my God, Turtles, you know, like some of the collectors are. But it's cool to see. It's cool to see. It is like that old friend thing where it's like, okay, yeah, I liked Raphael as a kid, and now he's a kaiju. That's dope.
Yeah. No, man, I think it's a generational thing. Like, if you weren't there, it's hard to describe the popularity. Like, it was like Beatlemania with the Turtles. Yeah, they toured! They toured! An album. They toured an album when I was 6 years old. I went and saw them in L.A. I'm like, my mom took me and my brother. I'm like, I don't even know what this is. We're just watching the Turtles. Yeah. She's like, they're going to be on Oprah. And I'm like, wow, this is, even as a kid, I'm like, this is a little cringe, but cool, whatever. We had so many of the Playmates toys. Like, they cranked those things out. I had boxes and boxes and boxes filled with Turtle toys. Like, Power Rangers was popular. They weren't Ninja Turtles popular, man. Like, they were the Beatles of, like, toy lines. Like, it's very hard to describe if you weren't there. Like, just, like, because we had a monoculture at one point. Now everything's fractured. But these things captured the imagination of boys and girls alike. Like, that cartoon for a good 5 years dominated everything. Nothing could touch it. Like, even at the heights of, like, Batman and X-Men, they weren't Ninja Turtles. Like, that was something very special. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I've kind of grown with them. And I understand, like, you have to change for a new generation. I didn't watch Rise of TMNT because I'm like, all right, this is for the weeb crowd. That's cool. I did love that 2012 Nick show. Like, that one was like, oh, you're doing, well, I was turned off by the designs, but I'm like, you guys are mixing the comics and the cartoons. Like, I'm all in on what you're doing here. This is amazing. So, for me, yes, it's a big deal. I can understand for a lot of the people, they're like, it's Ninja Turtles. I'm like, you don't know.
It's Ninja Turtles. Know.
You weren't there. Yeah. It's Ninja Turtles, you man.
Flipped that sentence.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was my thing of like, I was kind of like, I can't wait to buy this. Like, okay, man, you guys are getting me back into the comic store very hard. So,
yeah, me too. I've never bought as many comics as I have now with all the Godzilla stuff. Like, I've always kind of been like, yeah, I like Marvel, and I'll read Werewolf by Night and Bronze Age, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like, I have to go every week and pick everything up that's kaiju.
Yeah.
A, for the science, B, I just love it.
Yeah. I mean, I picked up the comic book. I had to pick up some, like, backers. I'm like, I don't have cash. Like, well, you got to buy $10. I'm like, oh, the Casey book's out. Oh, it's only $5. What else? Ah, that comic book. Okay, that'll put me over. So I started flipping through that Kong because I actually like that Kong. It's not an anime. It's an anime, that Kong animated series. I actually liked it quite a bit.
Dude, that so comic is being slept on. It's written by Simon Furman, which is crazy. Yes. I was like,
Mr. Transformers. Mr. Transformers. Yeah.
See, that's where you can get me excited. I read the name Simon Furman, and I was like, what?
Yeah, don't you know he made Grimlock King? He made Grimlock King, damn it. So, yes. So, I say it every show. I repeat myself. I'm like a broken, but our cup doth overflow, man. It's a great time. Like, again, and not only that, but, like, to just real quick, Wonder Festival summer was happening while Comic-Con was going on. And while the winter show that was back in February was like, oh, my God, there's just so much. This time it's like, hey, man, it's hot. We don't want to bring a lot of stuff, but we got a couple of cool things to show you. They unveiled some of those new Digimon Devil Reels, which I'm like, I kind of messed with Digimon a little bit. I'm kind of digging these things. Like, I was there at Godzilla Fest when they announced. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You're doing this? Felt like it was a no-brainer, but like, okay, I'm going to probably buy some of this nonsense.
Here we go.
But X-Plus, man.
They're going to stop, dude. They're not going to stop with these crossovers.
No, they're not. X-Plus got my money, though, because they finally released something that's only been done in kits. And again, I showed Lenny, and Lenny's like, I don't know where I'm going to put this, but they're giving us the landing flying iris in X-Plus form. And I'm like, oh, I don't have room, but I got to buy it, man. Like, I barely got room for the ride X-Plus that I have. I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to put you, but I am not sleeping on this one because I know this is going to be, if I don't get it now, it's going to be like an $800, $900 figure in like 2 years because everyone's going to want this thing.
Just wait till they do the ride Mechagodzilla, because you know.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for the ride. I'm waiting for the ride King Ghidorah too. But by the way, let's talk about that ride. That's the last bit of news we really have to talk about. Did you see the footage?
I did.
What'd you think?
It's really MonsterVerse. It's very heavily MonsterVerse, and like the overall, I think very inspired by it. Because Yamazaki is pretty open about that. He's like, yeah, MonsterVerse is pretty cool. Which is kind of based on him. But, yeah, it looks cool. I really like the section that was teased on, like, the key art when it was first announced of, like, Godzilla chasing after the boat. That's my favorite part. I kind of wish that was the whole ride. But I'm glad it is another Mechagodzilla grabs Godzilla, throws him in the boat building. But it looks cool, man. I'm excited.
This is why we got to get you out to Japan, because you need to. We need to get you on a train, take a 45-minute ride, transferring four goddamn trains to Sibun, the Knott's Berry Farm of Japan, as I affectionately refer to, because that's kind of what it is. It's old timey, and it's a lot of Kimba and Astro Boy rides, but. I've covered it on the show, but my buddy Kazuki took me out there and we rode that Godzilla ride 7 times in a row. And then we did Ultraman first, but I didn't make it to like ride it over again. By the time I got there, it was like, last show, get in there. I'm like, oh, this is cool. But that Godzilla ride, dude, you Fred Flintstone down Godzilla's back off his tail. And I'm not going to lie, man. Like, I got a little emotional on this ride. Even my buddy Kazuki's like, you okay? I'm like, this is everything I dreamed of as a child. Like, you, like, Yamazaki, this is the beauty. I don't think people understand about the genius of this man. He can give you a great melodrama. And at the same time, he also knows what's fun. He's like, I'm making an emotion ride. What can we do to really make the experience? Oh, hey, yeah. I'm going to make the Jeep thing you're in. Like, have parachutes. Ghidorah's going to pick you up. You're going to fly in Ghidorah's mouth. You see the fangs come down. And then you're going to land on Godzilla's back and just haul ass off his tail. And you guys are going to avoid Godzilla and Ghidorah, like, fighting each other. It's spectacular. And because it's like a motion ride, you're like Soren Calvin, you're just like all over the place. And the second we finish, Kazuya, he's like, are we going again? I'm like, you bet your ass we're going again. We're going like, but to the point, the poor girl that was in charge, she's like, again? I'm like, uh-huh. And here's the thing, like, here's the thing, Kyle, or Jacob, here's the thing, a little Freudian slip there. So when you go in, there's something they don't show you in the footage. There's a pre-show. Yeah. So you line up in this room, and there's an actor that comes out and acts his ass off. And Kazuki and I were the only two dudes, and he's like, hey, like, it's just you guys. Like, no. He acted like he was acting in front of 20,000 people in front of Budokan. Did not break character, gave it his all, and I'm like, God bless you, Japanese people. You don't half-ass anything. You go all in. And we went so many times, the guy had to take a break, and we got a new actor. It was a girl that came out, and she did the same thing. There was only like four of us. Like two other people joined us on this ride, and she's doing the same thing. I'm like, I love this. I the thing is, when they did the Ultraman one, because that was the second ride, they upgraded the pre-show, and the guy comes down in the SSSP uniform, and the projection system in the room is much more elaborate. So I'm very curious to see what this new like lineup is. I'm already plotting my return next year. So I told my buddy, I'm like, hey, you know, we're going to do this, what we're calling our Grand Ramen Tour. But I'm like, we're going to be in Tokyo for like 2 or 3 days for Godzilla, and we're going to Shibun, and we're going to go ride this ride. And just know, like, you're going to fork out $30 and you're going to join me, because we're going to go ride this thing, because I can't wait, because the first one is so damn incredible that I am salivating to wait to see what Yamazaki did for this one. So, and if it's any indication, after watching, because I watched Minus One first, then went on this ride, I'm like, oh, you were just practicing for Minus One. That's what this ride was, practice.
It was the audition tape. That's what I've been saying.
That's what I'm looking at this one. This is, oh, you're getting some tweaks in for whatever you're cooking with this next movie. So I'm quite excited to see what's happening. Like, I got a feeling November, we're going to get the official announcement. And then next November, 2026 is when Minus Two, or whatever the hell we're going to call it, is going to come out. And again, it's going to be like last year, March, 2027, Godzilla and Kong 3. There's probably going to be another Japanese Godzilla movie like 3 months before that. Like, we're just going to be like pigs in slop. Like, it's just going to be too much. So, all right. Well, we're pushing 2 hours. I think this is about a good time, if not to wrap up. Jacob, thank you again for coming on, man. I am proud to have you on here. I am proud to see you guys, you know, get as far as you have. You're doing the Lord's work, as my grandmother would say. Tell the good people that are listening at home, where can they find more of you and Kaiju United at?
Sweet. Thank you for all the kind words right there, Chris. It's really amazing. And it was so fun being on here, because I've listened to you guys forever. And we talk at cons and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think this is the first time you and me, besides like late night fun combos, that we've done something like this. So it was really cool.
Yeah. So it's we'll do it again. Like this, cool. I waited too long to get you on here. I've been meaning to get you on here sooner, but life is life.
But yeah, in terms of where to find us, every social media possible, we've got the name covered. Instagram is our bread and butter, because we got 11.9K. We're almost going to hit 12, which is cool. The website is the main meat of what we do, kaijuunited.com. Lots of great reviews, interviews, stuff. We got a busy weekend coming up. On the day we recorded this, we just dropped a 10-year anniversary review of the live-action Attack on Titan movies, written by a guy that thinks they are some of the greatest tokusatsu productions in the world. So
I'm not in disagreement. I actually like those movies quite a bit.
You know, but that's what we're about, you know, talking about what we love. Got reviews coming out, a couple interviews in the pipeline, but give us a follow on any social. we're really, really easy to reach out to. We're really easy to talk to. And visit the site, and hopefully we'll see you at some shows next year.
Are you doing anything at FanX? Is it FanX?
Yeah.
At Salt Lake? Something cooking for that?
Yeah, I actually got approved for Gamera 60 Years of the Kaiju Genre's Underdog. So
excellent. So, yes, if you're going to be out there in Salt Lake City for FanX, go see this good man. He knows what he's talking about. Check out that
panel. Excited Talk Turtle.
So on that note, if you're listening to us online, you can find us on our socials on Facebook, Instagram, X, Twitter, wherever you want to call it now. Instagram and X are at the Kaiju Kingdom. We're at facebook.com/the Kaiju Kingdom podcast. And hopefully if you're listening to this online, you found us on Spotify. We're also on Apple or wherever else you find better podcasts. And be sure to check out our sister show, which is coming back very soon, Common Kaisers. Talked to my good buddy Arian while we were in San Diego. He's like, hey, man, falling behind. I'm like, I know. He's like, we got 8 movies we got to get done. I'm like, I know. So our next film we will be reviewing will be Shinji Higuchi's Bullet Train Explosion, which, spoilers, it's fantastic. And on that note, that will do it for this edition of the Kaiju Kingdom podcast. For myself and Jacob,
me.
Thanks for watching, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.